originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Hello, everyone. Good afternoon, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To, Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Ponta for the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We are together again in our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios, and happy to have everyone with us tuning in throughout North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, and all of you streaming us worldwide and listening on podcast at our website that's there for you at horseracingradio.net. And looking forward to the next hour here this evening, another brand new trainer appearing on this program this week, and really excited to hear his story. JT, you actually have a personal relationship with this individual. It goes back to when you were training horses in California 20 plus years ago.
Yeah, well, our guest is a really great guy. He's got a fantastic family and been in the business a long time. He has, you know, a lot of horse knowledge and experience. He's been leading trainer in Washington for many years, and he was just a great guy to work with when he worked for me. He served as an assistant for me for 2 or 3 years, maybe 4. I don't know. I lose track of time, but it was always great to go to work and see his smiling face in the morning, and did a great job for me. And he's just another member of the graduate class of Jude Feld, Doug O'Neill, and Pete Miller, and Jeff Metz.
Yeah. D-Wayne Lucas has nothing on you.
No,
I mean,
no.
Dallas Stewart.
That guy.
Dallas, Mike Maker. What have those guys ever done, right? Mark Hennig, come on. Yeah. Give me a break.
Well, you know, for a guy who always had like 12 or 14 horses, I'd put myself up against Wayne any day of the week. I was lucky to have an assistant. And the guys that have worked with us have gone on to do great things, and I always take pride in what they do. It's always a nice thing when people say, oh, you know, who worked for you? And I start off with that list, and they go, wow, that's pretty impressive. Mr. House, my longtime client, one of his most prized possessions is the picture that one of his horses is there, and Doug O'Neill's in the picture. He was walking Hots then, and Pete Miller was my assistant, and the two of those guys are in the same picture at Hollywood Park.
So, oh wow,
he shows that to everybody that comes to his house.
Well, tonight's guest is indeed trainer Jeff Metz, and he has trained 685 thoroughbred winners in his career, more than $7.6 million in purse earnings to their credit. And just for good measure, he's also thrown in 9 victories with quarter horses. Yeah, he is ultra talented. He has a great story, and he's with us now on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Jeff, welcome to the program. Really appreciate the time.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me.
So what's it like to work for Jude Feld?
Oh, he's one of those guys that talk about coming to work and seeing someone with a smile on their face. I don't think I've ever seen a day when Jude didn't have a smile on his face. So whether we were running a cheap claimer or a horse in a stake race, he was always excited to have the horses, and he always had a smile on his face, win, lose, or draw.
Yeah, we always had a good time. Huh? Every morning was fun. We went out there with a good attitude, no matter what kind of horses we had. I always remember those days, and when you used to take Aaron Wellman and I over to the steeplechase race at Saratoga. We'd be at Del Mar. We'd watch that race on simulcast, and you would explain to us that sport. And Aaron and I always talk about that. I credit you with everything I know about steeplechase racing. So,
oh, very cool. It was always fun. We'd finish about 10 a.m., and then on the big screen at Del Mar would be Saratoga with their steeplechase race, usually, you know, one on the midweek and then one on the weekends. But, no, it was a lot of fun working with you and Aaron, and we had some great times. And then I still, to this day, you know, still between Bob Feld, Mark Feld, and Sean Feld. I have a lot of fun with the Feld family as well.
Fun with the Felds. It's like fun with flags.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be a great horse name, by the way. Fun with the Felds.
I don't know.
I keep trying to get your brother to name one in his honor and name it Lucifeld. That's what I call him when he takes me out on the town.
Yeah.
That nothing good can come of that. Well, let's just leave it at that.
He's dangerous.
Yeah, he certainly is. Jeff Metz has been dangerous with his horses on the racetrack, and he is our guest on Trainer Talk here tonight. Jeff, Bob Baffert used to say that Jude has the best racetrack laugh that you'll find anywhere. You remember that laugh?
Absolutely, and that's, we hadn't crossed paths in a couple of years, and I was just at the Keeneland January sale and ran into him, and the first thing I got was that beautiful Jude Feld laugh. So, it's a pleasure to be around him. He's fun to work with, and he's a good friend off the track. You know, he's one of these guys you could ask him anything, and he'd give you the shirt off your back.
Oh, thank you. That's very nice of you to say. But
it's a big shirt.
It's yeah, two people could fit in. But it's been a pleasure to know you, and I really do mean what I say when I say I'm very proud of what you've accomplished, because you know it's hard to do what you've done, and you're constantly reinventing yourselves and looking at new ways to train and new things to do, and I think that's very admirable.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I don't have to tell you or anybody else in the training game, it definitely has its highs and lows. And so, training on my own, going back to be assistant for a few people, training again, it's had its ebbs and flows. And then I ventured out of state with some horses and did pretty well there. And now, just like you said, when you and I talked at the January Keeneland sale, I said, well, time for another reinvention. And I'm going to focus my concentration on California. I was lucky enough to have 4 leading trainer titles of the 6 years I was at Emerald Downs. But now it's time to stay a little closer to home, not rack up so many frequent flyer miles, and concentrate on Santa Anita. And we're going to have a second base at Golden Gate as well.
You know, I had the chance to visit Emerald Downs one time, and it was many, many years ago, Jeff. But I had so much fun, and I thought that the racetrack, and you get a chance to kind of see Mount Rainier in the background, I thought it was so beautiful, and the people treated me so well. That had to be a great place for you to call home for a while.
Yes, it was, when I first came there, the fields were kind of short, like 5-horse fields, and the money was just so-so, but I was coming in with horses from Turf Paradise, and I was looking for somewhere that kind of where they fit, and I thought, well, maybe a young guy at the time, I was late 40s, and I thought maybe some new energy in that facility would, draw some attention and get some buzz as far as attracting new clients and new horses and stuff like that. And I always put some partnerships together, too. So with all that encompassing, there were some new people that came from out of state, and they came to Emerald Downs, and they were quite excited. They were like, wow, what a nice, clean facility. Ron Crockett was running it at the time, and he really took pride in everything being clean. And it was a newer track. It was only 20 years old at the time. So between the very nice weather in Seattle, it's often known for rain, but when you get those summer months like July and August, you get beautiful blue sky, clear air, lots of trees, and that very clean track, like with that backdrop, like you said, that Mount Rainier year-round has snow on it. So it is a beautiful place. And, the time there was great. I got to kind of build my resume, so to speak, and now comes a new chapter.
Well, you're very well-known around Santa Anita. You've worked for a lot of top stables and you've done excellent work everywhere you go. So it shouldn't take long for people to, hook up to your outfit and get some top horses.
I, like you said, I have been around quite a while. When I was 21, I started when I was 14 riding horses. And when I started on the track, I was 16 at Pleasanton, California, still going to high school and would have to gallop, finish up and head off to high school. Then when I was 21, I moved down to Santa Anita. So basically, I just turned 52, and I've been in Southern California since I was 21. So, yeah, a good 30 years plus at the Santa Anita circuit, so I've seen a lot of trainers come and go. I've seen the older ones, the younger ones, and everybody in between. I've always kind of been a horseman's horseman. You know, I worked for different trainers. I'd have a second string at Pomona. I worked for yourself. I worked assistant for Dan Hendricks. I've helped Bob Hess Jr. And, you know, never afraid to help other guys and do whatever I could to help them. Kind of always flew under the radar. Didn't have the best of stock. You know, just never got that big horse that you kind of need to attract bigger and better. So I just plugged along. And then there was a few trainers that said, you know, when I went out of town, because I was coming back and forth quite a bit between Arizona and Santa Anita and Emerald Downs and Santa Anita. So a lot of trainers would say, wow, you know, that's pretty, you know, I wish I could do that, you know, go to a smaller meet and get a, you know, do pretty well and be in the win column and stuff like that. Like right now, we also have horses at Turf Paradise. We're second in the standings behind a runaway in Robertino Diodoro. But, you know, we like to run our horses where they fit and win our share. But my hope is now with building the resume in a couple different locations that I can slowly get bigger and better horses on the Southern California circuit. So year round, Del Mar, Santa Anita, and even that small Los Alamitos meet is fun.
Well, you've got those nice wins under your belt. And I think, you know, it's your work ethic that allows you to do that. Cause you've never been afraid to get up in the morning and do your job and flying all over the place. I know it can be a struggle, but you have that desire in you that you want to be at the top of the game. And that's what drives you. A lot of guys say they want to, you know, have a stable at a smaller track or whatever, but they don't want to do the work. And they might find somebody, send them over. And that person's basically training the horses, but I know you try to be hands-on as much as possible, and it, you know, takes commitment.
Yeah, definitely, and that's why I was on a plane every week. I wanted to be able to not let too many days go by that my hands wasn't on those horses, and that's why I wanted my personal touch. I've been fortunate enough to have an assistant trainer that's been with me a couple of years and knows my program really well, so that bond has really grown. And just like you said, the other thing I always try to do is I'm always trying to recruit new owners to the sport. You know, thoroughbred horse racing, it's so fun, so exciting. It has its ups and downs. You know, when the horses don't run good, everybody's a little down. But, boy, when they win, there's nothing like that feeling, you know, going to the winner's circle. I mean, they're walking on clouds for about a day and a half, just so excited with that win. So until they taste walking down to that winner's circle and getting their picture taken, it's hard to describe it to them. But once they do get it, oftentimes they're in it for life. You know, they really like it. And so I try to put some partnerships together to where I make it affordable for people. And that's something I've done at all the locations I've been to. So that way a guy could get in with 10 or 25% and have a piece of the action. And it's just as much fun. And they can come to the barn and visit their horses. I try to be, you know, as good communication as possible, how the horses are doing, videos, pictures, stuff like that. So that's one of the things that, like you said, I mean, I try to do everything I can to include new people, get them started, and then keep them on the same page, and then have as much success for everybody that comes, you know, our way.
Well, you got a great photographer in the family, so the picture shouldn't be any problem.
Yes, that's, you know, Zoe, my daughter, she's really doing well. She's flying off to the Pegasus World Cup, you know, the Pegasus race coming up the Gulfstream. So she's flying out later tonight. But very excited for her and her young career. She's 22 years old now and, you know, very proud of her work. And she's a very good, talented photographer.
Talking with trainer Jeff Metz here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton on HRRN. Jeff, you mentioned the bond that you have with your assistant and how strong that relationship is. And every time that we've had trainers on this program that have horses kind of scattered all over the country at different racetracks, guys like Todd Pletcher or, you know, even a guy like Bob Baffert, for example, or Steve Asmussen, they always talk about how important it is to have good assistants. How critical is that for a trainer to be able to rely on somebody when they're not there?
I think it's, you know, it can be the make or break type of situation because that person has your back. You know, a lot of times, you know, Jude and I, like he said, you know, when you have a small barn, like right now I have 10 horses at Santa Anita, So if you're in the barn and you're working with the horses, sometimes you're not out at the races and the clubhouse and talking to people. Now with social media, things have changed over the last 20 years. But prior to that, when you're in the barn just working with the horses and working on them with different ice and blankets and therapies, that, you know, you need somebody to back that kind of has your back, has your best interests out for the horses. And that way you can be out and meeting people and traveling from one location to the other. So it is a very vital part of, you know, the making the machine work. And there was one time when I had three tracks going at once, and that that I could see where, you know, like you said, Pletcher and Ashmerson, you really have to have, you know, a top assistant, somebody you trust, because going to two places is doable. But when you get that third place, it really kind of breaks up your week. And I know that... you know, there's barns even in Southern California. They have quite a few horses, and so they'll have horses at Santa Anita and a second string at Los Alamitos or a second string at San Luis Rey. So that'd be no different than having, you know, two strings that you want to go see now and then. And oftentimes one kind of feeds into the other. But I see what you say is most people that you talk to, I agree. The assistant trainer really can be a difference maker. It can help you see things that you can't see. Two heads are better than one, and it gives you somebody to bounce ideas off of and get that second opinion. You know, you're always using the vet and the shoer and the exercise rider and the groom and the hot walker. You're taking everybody's little piece of the puzzle and saying, you know, how's this horse feeling? How's he eating? Is everything good? And so that assistant trainer can really play a key role.
Yeah, it's also good to learn from those people as you're going along, because you can learn something from everybody. I mean, we had a horse one time, not when you were working for me, but that nobody could figure out why this horse's leg wouldn't shrink down. It was like filled up for 2 months, and the vets couldn't figure it out, the shoer couldn't figure it out, I couldn't figure it out. And I had a gal working for me from Guatemala, and she had some mystery potion that she mixed up and put it on the horse's leg, and he was fine in 2 days. And it took us 2 months to get to that point. But she came in my office one day and she said, "I can fix this horse." And I said, "Well, fix away." And in 2 days, the horse was perfect. So you never know where that answer is going to come from. And it could come from somebody that's, you know, really, really smart, or somebody that you think, well, we'll see what she can do. And she showed me what she could do. So she had a job till she wanted to go home.
There you go. Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of trial and error. You know, that's what I use in my training, is different things, you know, see what horses like, as far as their training, their routine, their stall, everything. And then whatever they make it to where they're enjoying their work, they're enjoying their job. And then a lot of times, same with the races. Once you kind of figure them out, so to speak, what they like or how they're doing, then a lot of times you'll see a horse rattle off two or three wins in a row, or their form will be very consistent for five, six, seven races.
Jeff, tell us about a horse that you did that with, that you tinkered a little bit, a little bit of trial and error, things maybe didn't quite go so well at first, and then all of a sudden the horse just blossomed and you figured out what it was that this horse needed and the horse became pretty good.
There's been a couple that I've had that, you know, interesting enough that they have, you know, it's happened time and time, even on, like, I would say some claimers, some ones that turned into allowance horses, and then also some that have turned into stakes horses. One of the recent examples was Citizen Kitty, which she was up in Washington, and two seasons ago, so if we go back three seasons, she was just kind of on the bubble. She had a little bit of ankles were bothering her, and she was running for 20,000, 25,000. So we turned her out, freshened her up, and when she came back in the next year, she just got a little bigger and stronger, and now you're talking a 4 to 5 year old mare. And the following year, she ended up winning some stake races. She won at 6, 6.5, a mile and an eighth, and ended up being the, you know, Washington Older Mare of the Year, and just had a stellar season. And to go from, you know, a 20 claimer, and she did win a couple of those, but, you know, it kind of made it look like she had started her career, maiden special allowance in the Washington area, and then dipped down into the claiming. And then after a year and some time off, a little freshening, she came back even bigger and better. So that was kind of one example of that. And then there was another horse that we claimed first time out called Cabrage. And he's a funny horse. He's kind of spooky and looky and stuff like that. But this particular horse, he was a three-year-old first-time starter. So we claimed him. And next time out, we bumped him up in the claiming ranks. And then he rattled off a couple of wins. He was just one of those ones that you kind of had to do things his way, because a lot of people would not like that spooky quirkiness. But he had brilliant speed, and he actually ran 106 and change and still holds the record for, the fastest 6 furlongs ever run in Washington. So that was kind of a horse that you just had to kind of do things his way and not get after him or and sometimes you got to treat geldings like fillies, and sometimes you got to train fillies like colts. And, fillies like things a little lighter and a little softer. And as Jude will tell you, colts can take a strong hand and just come back the next day like it didn't. They don't even remember what happened yesterday. So there's a lot of give and take with horses, and whether they're males, females, or somewhere in between, you got to kind of see what kind of training works for them. Lighter, harder, more work, less workout, that kind of thing. And one of the things I think you definitely for me, and I think a lot of other people you may talk to, somebody asked me the question one time, well, what is it about racing that you like? Well, obviously I like the competition, because growing up playing sports and stuff like that. So that's one of the driving forces. And that was something that Dan Hendricks and I had in common. Dan's a very competitive person, and I know he liked that part of racing, and so do I. I love the competition. But when somebody asks me that question, what is it that you like about racing? It's the horse. It's that one-on-one, trying to figure out that horse. They're all like a puzzle. And then you say, okay, let's change his feed. Let's change his shoeing. Let's do this. Let's do that. And you keep tinkering until you get things just the way you want them. But a lot of trainers you talk to, you get things 100% right, it rains, the races get canceled. All of a sudden you get them right where you want them, or her, spikes the temperature, pops an abscess, grabs a quarter. So it's just, there's so many things. So that's why I think when you win a race, you see trainers so excited, over the top, especially owners too. With owners, you kind of have your, you go to your job, you go to your work, your business every day, and, probably not all that exciting. But you win a race, and they're jumping up and down. Even the most mild-mannered businessman is jumping up and down. So that's what kind of drives us, is that excitement to try and get to the win. But even if a horse runs second or third, runs a good effort, kind of outdoes what you think they were going to do, I think that's good progress. It's still very, makes you feel good that you're headed in the right direction. And when a horse gives you everything they can, there's not much more you can ask for than that.
Yeah, that's very important. It's the effort. You want to see him put in a good effort, whether that's winning, or sometimes it's just maybe getting a check, finishing in the top five, a big improvement from where they started. So those things are definitely important along the way. But any horse that can run 6 and change can be as quirky as he wants to be.
he ran some high 80s, low 90s in the Byers. He backed it up with this past summer at Emerald Downs. He ran 7 and change going out in 114 for 6.5. So he's run a couple of 106s. He's won a few stakes at Emerald. He's and at Turf Paradise. So yeah, definitely he's done everything we've asked of him. So no complaints there. And we even ran him in the Grade 1 Bing Crosby, and he ran 4th, a little bit of a stumble starter. He might have been 3rd in a Grade 1. So, the little horse that could, I'll say that for him.
Jeff, we're about 3 minutes away from our break here at the bottom of the hour, but I love the way you described each horse as being somewhat of a puzzle and trying to figure each horse out individually. How important is it? You talked about the relationship with your assistants and how important that is. How important is it to have owners that are on board with your philosophy and that will give you that kind of time to put that puzzle together?
That's a good question. And so what I think you have, obviously owners are as wide a spectrum as horses. But if you were to kind of break it down, where you have one side where the owners are very patient and, you know, whatever the horse needs, you know, do right by the horse, take your time, do this, do that. And then on the other side, you have people that get a little impatient. They want to be, I don't know the most diplomatic way to say, a little pushy, a little overzealous, and they want to, you know, speed up time. And it's sometimes hard to do that with horses. You know, Mother Nature just takes time to take care of things. So you have to give and take, and then sometimes you get a horse just right, and then it gets claimed. But as Jude will tell you, and any trainer we talk to, that when you get that's the tough part. When you put them in a spot where they have a best chance to win, sometimes they do get claimed. You know, when they win and don't get claimed, that's nice because then you can go back and do it again. So definitely I think when you have owners and you can have that nice relationship back and forth, and I try to teach new owners and even some owners, and I'm not like the biggest guy around, but there has been a few times where, you know, owners and I have had to part ways just because we're just clashing. You know, it's just not quite working out. So I think it brings my stress level down, and I think it'll be better off for them. So we part as friends, and both times we still keep in touch and we see each other and say hi and all that. But I think sometimes there's just not the fit. But on the other hand, too, there's some other clients that I have that are almost like family, you know, dinners after the races, or, you know, when we're in town together, it's you can kind of let your hair down and just be yourself. It's not you're just their trainer, you know. So there's those kind of relationships that come in with the owner trainer as well.
Yeah, it's one of those situations where you've got somebody that you really enjoy spending time with. And I think that's the key. I always encourage people to get to know who's going to train their horses. You know, a lot of people just look at the standings and choose their trainer that way. But I think it's like, it should be like a relationship. Like you're going to choose a girlfriend or a boyfriend or whatever. You gotta talk to them and see if you have the same goals and aspirations and where they are in their life and what they want to do in the business. And it's much better if you have a personal relationship.
We'll continue this conversation with our special guest tonight, Jeff Metz, here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fayza Tipton. We're going to talk about some of the other individuals that he worked with. He mentioned a couple of names like Dan Hendricks and Bruce Headley and Bob Hess Jr. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about his riding career. Yeah, that's all ahead. Trainer Talk, presented by Fayza Tipton on HRN.
Nominate now to the 2019 Fayza Tipton Gulfstream Selected 2-Year-Old and Training Sale. The Gulfstream Sale was the number one ranked 2-year-old sale in 2018 by ROR on pinhooks and percentage of profitable pinhooks, with an average of more than $385,000 and a median of $295,000. And more horses sold for $1 million or more than any other 2-year-old sale in America last year. It's the Fayza Tipton Gulfstream Sale, March 27th, 2019. Nominate now at FayzaTipton.com.
Gulfstream Park's championship meet runs December 1st through March 31st with live racing Wednesday through Sunday, with the $9 million Pegasus World Cup set for January the 26th, a program which also features the first running of the $7 million Pegasus Turf Cup and the return of the Pegasus World Cup Betting Championship on Friday, January 25th and Saturday, January 26th. The $1 million Florida Derby on March 30th will wrap up the championship meet at Gulfstream Park. Visit GulfstreamPark.com.
Bloom Racing.
Sky Diamonds takes the lead. Sky Diamonds to win, going away.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Midnight Bizou with another assertive final furlong. The top filly of the meet deservedly wins the Grade 1 Santa Anita Oaks.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best.
Super Saver Ross O'Brien, what a finish to the classic.
And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fayza Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
and Princess Kennedy is at the back of the field as they turn for the money now in the Emerald Distaff. Here comes Citizen Kitty on the far outside. She's let loose. Little Dancer running a huge one. The three-year-old filly still in it for the win. Little Dancer, Citizen Kitty, top qualities coming on the scene late. Citizen Kitty with a 16th to go has taken the lead. Little Dancer was gallant in defeat, but Citizen Kitty racing away, and she wins the Emerald Distaff. Little Dancer was second, and then came top quality, overplastered the favorite. She could only manage to be fourth.
Nobody better than Citizen Kitty in the 2017 running of the Emerald Distaff Handicap. Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on HRRN. Mike Penna, Jude Feld in our Jimmy Johns of Lexington broadcast studios, visiting with the man who trained Citizen Kitty. That is Jeff Metz. We're going to continue that visit momentarily, right after we remind you that it is never too late to start talking about racing at Woodbine. Major race dates that you can look forward to later this year include the Woodbine Oaks on June 8th, the Queen's Plate on June 29th, the Woodbine Mile September 14th, and the Grade 1 Summer and Natalma Stakes on September 15th. And then, of course, that Grade 1 Canadian International comes your way October 12th of this year. Opening day at Woodbine will be here before you know it. It's April 20th. Turf racing begins in mid-May. Tickets for the two-day Queen's Plate Festival are now on sale at woodbine.com/queensplate. Well, don't forget, if you missed any portion of this program, all you have to do is head over to our website. That's there for you.
This is Trainer Talk on HRRN, presented by Fasig Tipton.
There for you to listen to at your leisure, horseracingradio.net. And of course, you can follow us on social media at HRRN on Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Well, Jeff Metz back with us here tonight on Trainer Talk. And Jeff, that call of Citizen Kitty winning in 2017 at Emerald Downs, that has to take you back a little bit.
Yeah, it was quite a day. So we had talked earlier that she had won at six and a half. And so I had another filly at the same time called BCZ Middleton. So they won race, they finished 1-2. And it looked like BC was going to beat her, but Citizen Kitty won the race. And it was, so she was always kind of the bridesmaid. So the story goes along that, so that day they had a sprint for fillies and then they had a mile and an eighth. So BCZ Middleton won the sprint, a little undercard race, and Citizen Kitty won the big one, the mile and an eighth distaff. So yeah, it was a great day. You know, both fillies ran well. And the thing is that when you see a horse that can stretch from six to a mile and an eighth, especially one that was, you know, kind of strong, kind of headstrong, but, you know, everything went well, and boy, she just powered home. It was probably one of the best races of her career. And anytime you can get an older mare to run a mile and an eighth, I think it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, that was cool. And keeping two sets of owners happy, that's always cool, too.
Yes, the one was like, I don't want to run against Citizen Kitty anymore.
Very, very Baffert like of you.
Yeah. You know, we bought Citizen Kitty as a yearling. We raced her entire career. She made over $200,000, and she's set to. She's in Kentucky. I just visited her when I saw Jude Feld a couple weeks ago, and she's going to be bred to Violence. So her first breeding out there in Kentucky is going to be bred to Violence, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see a horse called Violent Kitty coming up down the road.
I tell you, Violence is a very good sire. He's one of my favorite freshman sires of the year, and maybe my favorite. And he's really doing well, and that should be a heck of a foal.
One of the owners of that mare, Citizen Kitty, Bruce and Cass Mahler of Tahoe. They live in Incline Village as well as Scottsdale. So their very first horse that they had with me was called Easy Kitty, and she actually ran the table as well the very first year I went to Emerald Downs, which was 6 years ago, and she ended up being voted Horse of the Year, you know, over the males and everything. So that was their first horse with me, and she's also back there in Kentucky making babies, and so it's kind of nice to have two champion mares, and they're still in the fold, and they're making babies for clients. And a winner I had on New Year's Eve at Santa Anita was a first-time starter by Smiling Tiger. A little bit of relation there with Citizen Kitty. Basically, Citizen Kitty's sister that was unraced produced this Smiling Tiger colt called Unleash the Tiger, and he won first time out at Santa Anita. So that was pretty exciting, and that was for Bruce and Cass as well, and their stable was called Highlander Racing.
Yeah, it's a great story. Jeff, how involved is a trainer in selecting a mare or a stallion for the horse that they train?
I had another horse that I recently kind of, the horse, we claimed him for about $40,000. He won some stake races for us. He won some great races, turf, dirt, anywhere from 6 furlongs at Emerald Downs all the way to a mile and 3/8 in Arizona on the grass. And his name was Why Not Be Perfect. And so that horse, when I saw him running later in his career at Golden Gate, we actually claimed him, and he's standing, and he's a stallion now in Oregon. So one client with some mares has him. And then as far as me, the owners kind of pick out their own stallions as far as, you know, who they want to breed to. I went to some farms and visited some stallions while I was there in Kentucky, and it was really nice to see Adina Springs, Calumet. I mean, their stallions look great. But I really think it comes down to what the owners want to budget for a stallion fee, who they think their lineage crosses best with, and then they kind of make the final say.
It's always nice when you have a chance to do that, pick a stallion figure out what mare should be bred to who. We had some listeners here that sent me an email and asked if I would help them pick a stallion, and so I suggested Johar for their mare, and I did my research and came up with Johar, and they didn't even really know who Johar was, but they looked him up and they kind of liked him and bred their mare, and they got a stakes winner. So now she's going to be a brood mare, and they asked me again. They'll see if lightning strikes twice. So I suggested More Spirit. So we'll see if they bite on that one.
All right.
Talking with trainer Jeff Metz. He's our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton here tonight. Jeff, you mentioned some names earlier in the program. We started the show talking about the fact that you worked for Jude for a few years. You also worked with Bruce Headley. You worked with Dan Hendricks. You worked with Bob Hess Jr. along the way. Tell us about working with them, their philosophies, and some of the things that you pulled from each of them that maybe you're still using today.
Yeah, when I first came down to Southern California, I was headed to Cal State Northridge. I was going to school there, and I really was just going to concentrate on college, but Santa Anita really wasn't that far away from Northridge. So I drove down, and next thing you know, I was getting on horses. And before I left Pleasanton, there was a guy that said, you got to go meet this guy, Bruce Headley, because when I was at Pleasanton, I was breaking horses. I was galloping horses, and then when I'd finish, I was breaking horses. So they said, this guy, Bruce Headley, is very hands-on. He breaks horses in his backyard, and, you know, you should meet him. So I went and met him, and they said, oh, I'm good right now. I don't need any help, but, you know, thanks for stopping by, and I'm glad Mark sent you by. So then I just started freelancing, rode for a few people, and then an opening came up, and Bruce said, hey, kid, come over. We need you. So I started working for him, and next thing you know, I was galloping horses at the track for him, and then I'd go to his house, and I'd ride babies in the backyard and get those going. Worked for him for a couple of years and had a second string. Sometimes when he was at one track, I'd have the babies at Pomona and just feed the system. And down at Del Mar, so I kind of traveled all over and worked with him. One time he took a couple-week trip out to Argentina, and that was when I got my assistant trainer's license. I was 22 years old at the time, and I remember getting the trainer's license, and there we were. You know, it was the assistant, but it's basically the same test you take as if you were going to be a trainer. The only difference is the workman's comp insurance and a few clients to train for. But I met my wife there at that barn. We both worked galloping horses together, and my wife Jennifer, she galloped at the barn, and that's how that relationship started. And then the next thing you know, here we are many years later, and we along the way, I taught my son how to gallop when he was 16. He's 20 years old now, named Josh Metz, and he's riding currently for Bob Baffert. He spent a couple of years with John Sadler, and right now he's working for Bob Baffert and Phil D'Amato. And then, as Jude mentioned, my daughter's 22, and that's Zoe Metz. She's works for marketing at Santa Anita and Del Mar. She's also a freelance photographer and has worked the sales. So it is kind of a family affair, and if you take it back a generation, my mother and father owned horses when I was growing up, and that's where I watched and saw racing. And then my mom used to be the paymaster or assistant paymaster at Santa Anita and Del Mar for many years, so a lot of people know her from there. And my mom and dad still travel with me when I go out of town to a different racetrack. They really love the game, and so it's kind of a family affair.
Your dad used to get so excited when you'd run a horse. A lot of times he'd have a piece of him or whatever, but I remember how excited he'd be on race day. He'd be like pacing around, and if you won, he'd go absolutely crazy. And I always loved that about him. I always loved his enthusiasm for the game.
Yeah. So when you talk about people that I worked for, you know, Bruce Headley, he used to gallop his own horses way up into his 50s and 60s. And he was a guy that, like Jude said earlier, you know, just a hard worker. He would ride 15, 18 horses at the track. Sometimes he'd try a little too hard, and he'd be trotting them back and forth to the track, and people would get upset. But then he'd finish there, and he'd go to the house and ride another 5 or 10 in company with me or the other guys. And so he wasn't afraid of work, and that's how I heard he built his empire, was breaking a lot of horses. Tan Foran was running back in the day, Bay Meadows and Golden Gate. And so he broke horses, raced horses, did a lot of the work himself. And he just, next thing you know, he had some champion sprinters that and some, you know, tremendous success. So I got to work alongside of him, and I still say hi to him. And, you know, we chat on the rail at Santa Anita. He still comes out and watches his horses at Clocker's Corner. So, you know, we've remained friends for many years. Another guy that I worked for was Dan Hendricks, and Dan worked for Richard Mandela. And anyone around racing knows, you know, how meticulous and what a good horseman Richard Mandela is. And Dan Hendricks is another one that he used to gallop, and was just a natural horseman, kind of came from a horsemanship family where his family even rode trick horses. And so he really had a good feel for horses. He could, you know, feeling their legs and checking their body language, and he really had a good feel for horses. And so that was what made him very successful. And then the last person you mentioned was Bob Hess Jr. And that was another, you know, one of those peaks and valleys, you know, just not enough horses. So I had to reach out and like a couple of these jobs, you know, I needed the work, I needed money. And so I put in my time and tried to offer my, you know, whether it was galloping, riding the pony, running a second string, whatever they needed, I would try and help and be there to do it. So with Bob Hess, again, it was just he liked things neat, tidy, clean, you know, and just listen to the horse, let the horse tell you when you need to back off, when you need to push a little harder. And so all these guys were good horsemen. As we know, Bob Hess, a second-generation horseman. His father's a trainer at Golden Gate. And so everybody, even when I was first galloping at Pleasanton, when I'd ride for different people, I'd say, boy, what do I like from this person? And what do I like from that person? And I try to incorporate it all. And, you know, trainers know there's the horse side of it. There's the owner side of it. There's the business side of it. There's just so many moving parts that, yes, it'd be nice if it was just a, you know, a car or something where it was, they don't eat, you know, they just sit there on the lot until you sell them. But in our business, there's a living, breathing thing, as well as the people that work with them. So there's a lot of moving parts that we have to keep the help happy, and we have to keep the horse happy, and we have to keep the owners happy. And as Jude knows, we had to pay the feed man, and we got to keep him happy, and the shoer, and the vet, and on down the line. So there's a lot to it. But, you know, for every 9 things that go wrong, and there's one that go well, and if you hit a slump, it might be 1 out of 20 or 1 out of 30. But once you get that win, you're like, okay, now I know why I got up at 4 a.m. every day and just kept trucking along. It was to get to that point. And So I've been fortunate to a couple times I'll joke and Peter Miller will say, you know, how good he's done in leading trainer at some of these different meets. And he'd joke with me and say, well, Jeff, you got more wins than I do. But I was in a different circuit and, you know, it's a different thing. But it's nice to come back to Santa Anita with both guns blazing and see what we can do.
Yeah, well, there's no place like Santa Anita in the morning. And one of the great things is the morning time that you spend with the other trainers and all the banter that goes on and those guys that you mentioned. I mean, Bruce Headley, there's nobody like Bruce. I mean, he's got tricks up his sleeve that only he knows. And when you say you go to his backyard and break horses, people go, oh, his backyard. And he lives right down in a beautiful part of Arcadia, and he's purchased some of the properties around him so he has more room for his horses, which sometimes his neighbors aren't very fond of, but he does it right there at his house. It's amazing. And he's raised some tremendous racehorses right there out of his backyard in Arcadia. So people always raise an eyebrow when you talk about that, but it's pretty special. And being able to say that you worked for him, that's pretty special too, because he's an unbelievable horseman.
No, it was great memories, and there were times when he would work horses, five and six horses in a team, so it was like a little training race. And then sometimes we'd finish at Santa Anita, and all four or five of us exercise riders would head to Pomona. We'd take two sets of five, and we'd get 10 horses out in, you know, 30, 40 minutes. And when I worked for Dan Hendricks, same thing. He used to work sets of two and three and out of the gate, and he did really well with first-time starters because he almost had like little training races, and then they knew what to do when it came race day.
Jeff Metz with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. He started his career riding horses, then he worked for several people, as he just told you, and now here he is training on his own, a multiple title winner at Emerald Downs and looking to have the same impact now in Southern California as he begins training on that Santa Anita, Del Mar, Los Alamitos circuit. Jeff, you had touched on your son and teaching him to ride. He learned from one of the best, and I don't think we've touched on this enough throughout the program. You were quite an accomplished rider, a champion hunter-jumper rider. Take us back to that time. Tell us about your career.
Well, when it was funny that Josh, my son, and I have a lot of parallels. We both kind of grew up with our parents having horses, but I would go to the farm and see the babies, and I wasn't that excited till about 14. And then at 14, I went to a summer camp where you learn to ride. And what I did was I started taking lessons, and next thing you know, I was riding English because it was kind of like the jockey saddle. So I thought, okay, I'll ride English. Next thing you know, I was jumping, and it was kind of fun. So I liked it, and I stuck with it. And so I was able to ride and compete in hunter jumper competitions and a couple of year-end championships, and it was a lot of fun. It taught me a lot more about balance and taking care of the horses and personalities. And then I tried to pass that on to my son because same thing. He wasn't too interested until about 14. Then he started getting the bug. And then because my wife and daughter and I were very horse-oriented, and my son, Josh, was kind of felt like the odd man out. But, boy, once he got going and got a taste of galloping and exercising, he's got a nice set of light hands. Very proud of the rider he's become. And so it's nice to pass that on to the next generation. But I was lucky enough to ride hunter jumpers. And then even in my early 20s, I rode in amateur jockey races, which were kind of similar to steeplechase races where the weights were a little heavier. You know, I always wanted to be a jockey, but at 5'8 and 133 pounds, it just wasn't happening. So, but that gave me a chance to ride where the weights were about 135 to 140. And I got to go all over North America and Europe, and that gave me another appreciation for horses at all levels, horses all around the world. And boy, what a camaraderie with horse people. It doesn't matter what country or state you're from. It seems like, and I think Jude will attest to this, anywhere you go, it seems like you know somebody at that racetrack. And that's played a good part for me too, because there'll be somebody I could call and say, hey, I'm shipping in over here for a race. Do you mind if I, you know, come to your barn? And I always try to have the door open for people that need to ship in and host them, because, you know, it's just a tight-knit horse racing group, and so we like to help each other.
Yeah, that's one of the cool things about the racetrack. It's almost like going to church. You know somebody there, and if you don't, they'll find you. It's really cool.
Points in the right direction.
Yeah, it's really cool. And you know, we used to take care of the police horses when they'd come to Santa Anita. I'd always empty out a couple stalls for them and bed those horses down, and the guys would love it because you know, our crew would give those horses baths when they were done for the day, and the police officers didn't have to do anything. they wish they could keep their horses at the barn year round. But it's always fun to have people come in and you learn new things and you meet new people and you go around, like you say, you go around the country and even around the world sometimes, and people recognize who you are and what you do, and it's really cool.
Definitely.
Jeff Metz here on Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Jeff, because we've had this longstanding relationship with Phasic Tipton on this program, and you talked about coming here for the horse sales, is that something that you plan on doing as you look to expand your stable? Will you go to the yearling sales or to the two-year-old and training sales and try to select some horses for your clients?
Yeah, definitely. That's the game plan, is to attend those sales and not only network with other people, but try and build relationships with some of the farms, some of the consigners, some of the different people that you're going to come across that you can work together. And one of the things that we want to do is continually upgrade and get better stock, because, you know, it doesn't matter what you pay for them, it's how they turn out at the end of the day. So if we could get a little upgrade in stock, I think it'll go a long way for what we want to do.
Well, it's a great place to find new clients and get some good racehorses. The thing nowadays is with simulcasting, there's not as many people that go to the racetrack on a daily basis. In the old days, there'd be 23,000 people at Santa Anita on a Wednesday. Now you're lucky if there's 3,000 or 4,000 on a Wednesday. But at the sales, yeah, Everybody gathers. And
that's it.
Yeah.
And sometimes you'll go to a sale not to buy, but just to be around where it's a nice networking day where everybody you hadn't seen in a while is in one place. It's so it kind of puts a date on the map to where you can attend. And the other thing is, Phasic Tipton is going to be having a couple of sales out here in California. So they're going to have a two-year-old in training sale in June, and then in the fall they're going to have a yearling sale. So I think that's really going to boost California as far as having Phasic Tipton come out here and put on a good sale. There's Barrett's has recently gone by no longer having sales, but I think Phasic Tipton is going to carry the baton, and it should be pretty good for Southern California racing.
Jeff, you obviously have a lot of responsibilities and on the training side of things, but you also have your family, and we've talked about them throughout the program. How does a trainer, because this is a 365-day-a-year job and you're there 24/7 almost, at least it seems that way, how does a trainer balance the family life and the professional life when you're trying to handle all that?
You know, it's tough. That's a thing that we always have to kind of walk that fine line. And nowadays with email and cell phones and text messages, I mean, you almost from 4 a.m. till about 9 o'clock at night, sometimes the phone's ringing. It's different things going, coming, whatever. You know, owner has a question, they email, they text, whatever.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you just got to plug in the phone and kind of shut it down and focus on the family and have a little fun and do, you know, something outside of work so you stay fresh and don't get burnt out. But vacations are kind of few and far between. A lot of them are actually horse-related kind of vacations, you know, Breeders' Cup or Pegasus or something like that. So even though they're vacations, they're still something that you like to do, horse-related. But I think you got to do the best you can and try to enjoy that family time. I know just in the last month or two since my focus has changed, you know, we'll be cooking or messing around in the kitchen and we're kind of joking and having a good time and, you know, playing with each other. So it's a lot of fun, and I'm looking forward to more of that this year.
What things will you do or what other interests do you have outside of racing when you do get the chance to get away a little bit with the family?
You know, I haven't really got to play golf that much because I don't have enough time to kind of stay consistent with it. But that's something that I'd like to do with a few friends. They like to do that. Another thing I like to do is play basketball. So I'm going to try and do a little more of that at the gym where I go. And so I'm hoping to, you know, you always worry like, well, it's like if you don't stay in shape, you don't want to do it. But if you do it more often, then you can stay in shape and you'll feel a little better about it. So watching basketball and playing basketball is something that I really enjoy.
Well, you got to stop by Windstar Farm when you're here and get in one of the pickup games. They have their own. They have their own. What would you call it? It's not just a basketball court. It's more of an arena.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice. I've seen a lot of tennis courts / basketball courts. You know, that the way they're building them these days.
Don't take this the wrong way, Jeff. But I'm assuming you don't play center, right?
That's right. At 5'8", tremendous on defense. Not a bad outside shooter, but I'd pretty much get stuffed every time I went down the middle.
Elliot Walden will be waiting in the lane for you.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll have to use my quickness against him.
That's definitely good. You got the right key there.
Yeah. I've coached a lot of basketball, too. It's something I started getting more horses, and I didn't get to do it as much, but I've coached anywhere from kindergarten, first grade at the YMCA, third and fourth grade at the City League, and middle school. So that's something I did in the past that I really enjoyed. But coaching, you have to be a little more, you know, it took more time. So now if I could play it and just enjoy it, I can do it at a more leisurely pace.
Is it more challenging coaching the young kids or the young horses?
Well, I went to school to actually be a coach. So my major from college is kinesiology. So if the horses didn't take off, that's what I want to do is teach PE and coach. So that I think that the horses are more difficult because they don't talk. That's obviously you have to figure it out on your own. They can't tell you, boy, my foot hurts. Can't you figure it out? But yet, you know, the kids, and just like we talked about owners, a lot of times it's not the kids, it's the parents, you know. So for parents listening, I'm a parent, so I know, you know, we all go through it. When our kids are playing Little League or sports, it's, that coach, he doesn't know what he's doing, you know. But
Well, Jeff, it's been an absolute delight to have you on the program. We're up against the end of the show. Didn't mean to cut you off there, but really appreciate the visit here tonight. Thank you so much, and thanks to Jude for lining this up, too. Well done, and great show.
Thank you very much.
All right, all the best moving forward. Jeff Metz here on Trainer Talk. Interesting guy, huh?
Oh, he's great. He's one of the best.
And well-polished, too. He's got a career in broadcasting when he finishes up training, too, if he ever wants to go that direction. Really smart guy.
Yeah.
All right, for our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, and for our special guest, Jeff Metz, I'm Mike Penna. Don't forget to check out the podcast. If you missed any portion, it's there for you at horseracingradio.net. Thanks for listening to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton.